The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Mike Edwards with another edition of the Armchair Traveler from the North Carolina Reading Service, previously known as the Triangle Radio Reading Service. And over the next half hour, I will be reading to you from the National Geographic Traveler and AAA Go Magazine. And before we begin our journey on today's Armchair Traveler, please let me remind you that neither the North Carolina Reading Service nor I are endorsing any of the cruises, safaris, tours, or other travel itineraries that might be featured in the articles we're going to be reading. These are selected simply for your enjoyment and edification. You know, when we share our travel stories, we most often speak of what we've seen. Well, today on Armchair Traveler, we begin a series of articles for the month of September that focus on what you might hear in your travels. These articles are primarily from the August-September 2019 issue of National Geographic Traveler, which, as the cover is suggesting, devotes itself to sound journeys, with writers offering how we can hear the world in various locations. And on this episode of Armchair Traveler, writer Trevor Cox is going to invite us to enjoy Soundscapes, 15 Ways to Hear the World. He hopes you'll want to plan an acoustic journey into the planet's most musical spaces. So let's begin our journey and learn some more. In a world dominated by spectacle, what are the auditory equivalents of the Eiffel Tower, Stonehenge, or the Grand Canyon? Searching for an answer, we tuned in to Trevor Cox, a British professor of acoustic engineering and an explorer of Earth's most amazing sound sites. On vacation some years ago, I was leafing through a travel guide for sights to see and experiences to be had, he tells us. It suddenly struck me that the book mentioned nothing about sound. It's easy to overlook how important what we hear is to our travels. After all, we have no ear lids, and so our brain is always listening to the soundscape. If your ears chose your next holiday destination, where would they go? Here he reveals 15 of his favorite places to visit for extraordinary sounds. And included with each of these sites that we're going to visit briefly, he has this little volume control knob that indicates the sound experience where it falls on a scale of quiet to loud. Quiet beginning around 7 o'clock, if you picture an analog clock, just a walk-type clock, and you have 7 o'clock, you know, down in that position. 6 is right at the bottom, and then 7 o'clock. And it goes all the way around to the 5 o'clock position for the loudest, okay? So our first one gets a quarter to the hour position, and that would be 9 o'clock. And it's Serengeti, Tanzania. Gong Rocks is the location. A xylophone made from stone might seem an unusual musical instrument, more likely to produce a disappointing clunk than a sonorous bong. But certain stones can make beautiful notes if the microscopic structure of the rock is right. Strike the rock gongs in Serengeti, and you get a wonderful metallic clang. These large boulders are covered in a percussive marks from thousands of years of use. Such rock music, in quotes, I must add, provides some of the earliest evidence of sounds our ancestors made. And then our next one is Epidaurus, Greece, the ancient theater. It, too, is at the 9 o'clock position, so it's a little bit on the quiet side, if you will. Dating from the 4th century B.C., the ancient theater at Epidaurus is a Greek architectural masterpiece, and one of the earliest structures that we know was designed with sound in mind. The steep banking and semicircular shape get the audience in close to the stage as possible in order to hear the performers better. Now, tour guides delight in demonstrating the theater's perfect acoustics, astonishing visitors as a pin dropped on the stage is heard toward the back of the vast amphitheater of stone seats. And then next we go to Vajrayapura in India, where the Whispering Gallery is located at Jol Gumbaz. And this one has a 2 o'clock position on the loudness side, if you will. The grand 17th century mausoleum of Jol Gumbaz is a testament to the power of Sultan Adil Shah, ruler of Bajrapur, who is buried here. With its slender octagonal turrets at each of its four corners and a circular dome above, the tomb is a majestic sight. But people travel here for the chance to shout in its famed Whispering Gallery, make a sound near the inside walls of the dome, and it will hug the concave surface, repeating your voice over and over as the sound does laps around the roof. Next, our fourth stop is going to be in Oslo, Norway, the Emanuel Vigeland Mausoleum. And this one is at 12 o'clock on the loudness scale, so it's kind of in between the silent and loud sides. Artist Emanuel Vigeland, 1875 to 1948, originally built Tomba Emanuel in 1926 as a museum for his works. But when he decided the building should also serve as his tomb, he transformed the soaring barrel-vaulted main hall into a dimly lit space covered in frescoes depicting every aspect of life, from conception to death, including some extremely explicit images. The space is wonderfully responsive to sound. Sing a note, and it reverberates around the room and cascades gently from the arched roof. Now we're head over to Boston, Massachusetts, in Symphony Hall. This one is getting the loudest mark so far. It's at the 5 o'clock position. Home to the Boston Symphony Orchestra, Symphony Hall is a mecca for someone like me who is fascinated by oral architecture. Now, completed in 1900, it was the first auditorium where modern science helped make a great-sounding venue. When I visited, I reveled in how the hall's acoustics enhanced the orchestra's music. As the 20th-century conductor Sir Adrian Bolt put it, "The ideal concert hall is obviously that into which you make a lot not very pleasant sound, and the audience receives something that is quite beautiful." And on to stop number 6, we're at Zadar, Croatia, and the Sea Organ. This one positioned at the 10 o'clock, or, well, I guess I should say the 10 o'clock mark, and toward the quiet side, but almost to the top. And then it says here, built in to Zadar's rather promenade are 35 organ pipes that sound while waves lap against the shore. As you walk along the seafront, the melody and harmonies change. The wave's movement pushes air in and out of the organ pipes to create the notes at random. But overall, what is heard is surprisingly pleasing because the pipes have been tuned to harmonies used in local folk music. You can visit other wave organs in San Francisco, California, and Blackpool, England. Then we move to number 7. This one not too far away from us. It's in Luray, Virginia. It's called the Great Stalactite Organ. And it has a 10 o'clock feature on the quiet side, but toward quiet, I should say. Luray Caverns has the most amazing stalactites and stalagmites. I went there to hear a sonic treasure. An organ that creates music by tapping the cave formations. Tunes take on an ethereal quality as the sound echoes around the large cavern. Created back in the 1950s, it was the brainchild of Leland W. Sprinkle. He spent 3 years armed with a small hammer and a tuning fork, searching for the right cave formations to make each note. Then we head over to Yorkshire, England, for the Thurgoland Railway Tunnel. This one's at the 2 o'clock position on the louder side. Tunnels are lots of fun to shout in, and as any toddler is going to readily demonstrate, but here is one whose sound is particularly unusual. This disused railway tunnel now forms part of the UK's National Cycle Network. Constructed in the 1940s, it has an unusual cross-section with bulging walls that form a horseshoe shape, along with very smooth and thick concrete walls. This creates an aural treat. Shout in the tunnel, and you hear an extraordinary metallic flutter as the sound bounces around and slowly dies away. And back to one at the 12 o'clock position, and so therefore between quiet and loud. This one in Southeast Australia, it's called a superb lyrebird. The superb lyrebird is one of the world's most skillful vocal impersonators. It can mimic the calls of about 20 other species it hears in the rainforest, including whipbirds and kookaburras. This strange amalgamation of sounds is sung to impress possible mates, with the male performing from a stage it builds on the rainforest floor. Even more remarkably, birds brought up in captivity impersonate man-made sounds like car alarms, chainsaws, and the click of camera shutters. Wow, imagine that. Well, we move on to Isfahan, Iran, and this is stop number 10 of the 15 that we're going to visit. And we're going to visit here the Imam Shah Mosque. Constructed in the 17th century, this building is stunning with dazzling blue Islamic tiles. The huge domed roof is what creates this sonic wonder. Tour guides will stand underneath the dome and flick a piece of paper to create about 7 quick fire echoes. Clack, clack, clack. sound bounces back and forth between the fourth floor and ceiling, with the curved dome focusing the echo, forcing it to keep moving up and down in a regimented fashion. Next is the Altan Emel, Kazakhstan, Singing Sand Dune. Yep, this one's at the 2 o'clock position on the louder side. Marco Polo ascribed the boom of sand dunes to mischievous spirits, creating music with the beat of drums and the clash of arms. When you slide down this dune in Altan Emel National Park and create a sand avalanche, you'll feel the surface quaking beneath you as a loud drone fills the air. Only a few dunes have just the right type of sand. As thousands of grains synchronize their movements and sing in a coordinated choir, that must be a spectacular thing to hear. Then we go over to number 12, Lancaster, California, and the Musical Road. Now, this peculiar stretch of road creates a rendition of Rossini's William Tell Overture, used as the theme song, you may recall, for the Lone Ranger. The musical notes are created by a set of grooves that vibrate the car wheels like a rumble strip. To get a melody, the Lancaster Road has some grooves bunched close together to get high notes and ones farther apart to get low ones. The fidelity might be poor and the melody out of tune, but I found it impossible not to smile while driving on it. Our 13th location is the Chichen Itza in Mexico, and it's the Kukulcan Pyramid. And this is a 79-foot Maya step pyramid. Kukulcan, a.k.a. Castillo, the castle, sits at the center of the archaeological site of Chichen Itza. If you stand at the bottom of the steps and clap your hands, you get this incredible chirping sound. Whether it was constructed deliberately to make this noise or the sound is an accidental sonic marvel remains a matter of debate. The regular pattern of sound bouncing off the treads of the staircase is responsible for the chirp. Now, and by the way, that one's at the 9 o'clock position, kind of on the quiet side. This one, the next one, is almost quiet. It's at the 7 o'clock position. It's in Salford, England. It's called the Silent Anechoic Chamber. In this ultra-silent room, sound does not reflect from the foam-studded walls, but you don't hear silence. Instead, you often get the disconcerting experience of hearing body sounds like your blood pumping. It's an oppressive place in which some people last only a few minutes. The chamber at the University of Salford is open to the public a couple of days a year. Chambers can also be found in Minnesota and California. And our final stop, number 15, is the Svalbard, Norway, Bearded Seals. Listen in to the call of a bearded seal, and it's hard to believe that this is natural. It sounds more like a sound effect from a sci-fi movie. Male bearded seals descend underwater in spirals, singing and releasing bubbles. They create long, drawn-out whistling glissande, with the pitch of the sound gradually dropping. It's thought that the longer the glissando, the more attractive the male is to females. To hear this sound, you need to use a hydrophone. That's an underwater microphone, the kind of device that researchers also use to listen to whales. You may have heard some of those before. So, wow, what a fantastic journey. Thanks to writer Trevor Cox. Remember, he is a professor of acoustic engineering at the University of Salford in the United Kingdom, and he's authored a book called The Sound Book. Keep in mind that we'll have more sonic wonders to visit during the month of September on Armchair Traveler. Well, we're going to continue in the August-September 2019 issue of National Geographic Traveler, and we're going to flip some pages. And we're going to go to a section that is called Like a Local. And in this one, we're going to get a taste of Portland, Oregon, thanks to writer Julian Smith. Visiting Portland, Oregon is a little like taking a master class in sustainability. Everywhere you turn, it seems there's a recycling bin, a bike share rack, a community garden. Whatever the metric, tree cover, renewable energy use, percentage of bike commuters, Oregon's largest city always comes out or at or near the top of the list. The city's green is good mindset was codified in 1980 by Urban Growth Boundary, established to keep sprawl in check. Today, residents revel in 385 miles of bike-friendly roads and paths, more than a dozen farmers markets, and a host of LEED-certified buildings. It's all served with a heaping helping of Portlandia-style eccentricity, of course. Don't miss the vegan shoe stores and seed-to-table restaurants. With a pledge to use 100% clean energy by 2050 and plans afoot to link to Seattle and Vancouver by high-speed roads, Rail. Stumptown's future is looking even smarter. Well, we've got a few more things to talk about Portland here. We've got places to eat, places to stay, places to play, and places to shop. Let's start with the list about where to eat. Chart the Carts. Pine Street Market, a modern food hall in Old Town, offers a cross-section of hometown culinary choices from Korean barbecue at Kim Jong Smokehouse to soft-serve ice cream at Whiz Bang Bar, an offshoot of the legendary Salt and Straw. Food carts are clustered in pods across town. Head to Northeast Alberta Street for beef short rib over a pasta at Gumba and a summer breeze juice from Sip. Some carts grow up to be restaurants like Fried Egg I'm in Love, which now plates its hearty sandwiches in a brick-and-mortar spot on Southeast Hawthorne Boulevard. Next, where to stay? Well, there's small wonders. Two tiny house hotels on the east side of town apply the smaller is better philosophy to accommodations. Both offer buildings with footprints of less than 200 square feet, but they come complete with full bathrooms, fire pits, and local art. At Caravan, choose from lodgings such as the amazing Mysterium, modeled after a traditional Romani wagon, and the shingled skyline built from salvaged materials. A favorite at Tiny Digs is the Japanese-themed bamboo featuring a koi pond and shoji screen door. Downtown, the Nines, an elegant lead silver hotel, is powered entirely by renewable energy. How about places to play? Well, we have joy rides. The first move is obvious, snag a bike. The orange racks of the Bike Town shared bike system are everywhere, giving access to many miles of urban exploration. It's a climb to Forest Park, but the views from one of the country's largest city parks are worth it. At the other end of the spectrum is Mill Inns Park, the world's smallest, a 2-foot-wide patch of flowers in the median strip of Southeast NATO Parkway. Another offbeat destination include Mike's Museum of Motion Picture History, home to the knife from Psycho, and then there's Oaks Park, an amusement park that has been in continuous operation since 1904. How about where to shop? Well, Uncommon Goods. Portland has a serious do-it-yourself streak when it comes to the creative arts. Both outposts of Crafty Wonderland offer wares handmade by more than 250 local creators, while Artistic Portland is a downtown cooperative that stocks jewelry, fashion, and crafts. For eccentric souvenirs, head to the Freaky Boutry Kuyarum in the Slabtown neighborhood, part museum, part art gallery, part gift shop, and part ice cream parlor. It's pure Portland. Need a vampire killing kit or a selfie with a Sasquatch? Well, this is the place. And I mispronounced it. I want to get that correct. It's Freaky But True Peculiarum. Eyes crossed there looking at that thing. It took the whole page, but it's Freaky But True Peculiarum there in Portland, Oregon. Wow. Well, as we enter the month of September, we are reminded that we're in the last days of summer and the season will soon turn to fall. The editors of AAA Go Magazine offer us 6 picks for fall fun in their September-October 2019 issue. As their introduction states, from musical celebrations to cultural events, these autumn festivals make ideal weekend road trips. Let's check them out, okay? First, we have the Mountaineer Folk Festival, Spencer, Tennessee, September 6th through the 8th. Held each year in Fall Creek Falls State Park, this festival showcases the cultural history of the Cumberland Plateau. You'll find handmade crafts, traditional mountain music, and demonstrations of pioneer skills, for example, chair caning, log hewing, sorghum syrup making, and blacksmithing and other crafts. And more information is available to you online at mountainglenonline.com. That's Mountain Glen, G-L-E-N, mountainglenonline.com. Now, the 49th annual Oktoberfest is in Helen, Georgia, September 5th to October 27th. Plenty of time there, huh? And they have special events on selected dates. German music, dancing, food, beer, and lots of Lederhosen and Dirndls await visitors to this charming Bavarian village in northeast Georgia. Festivities include live traditional German music. Events take place in the town's Riverside Fest Hall and began with a parade through town. Admission is free on Sundays. Now it's $8 on weekdays and $10 on Saturdays. So this is a big-time event that goes on for several days, or weeks, I should say. More information available to you at the HelenChamber.com website, HelenChamber.com. Then we have the Mountain State Forest Festival. This is in Elkins, West Virginia, and it's September 28th through October 6th. In its 83rd year, this is one of West Virginia's largest and oldest festivals, with more than 75,000 people attending each year. The nine-day event includes forestry and wood exhibits, a juried art show, lumberjack competition, rides, arts and crafts, a quilt show, and other amusements. Grammy Award-winning Marty Stewart and his Fabulous Superlatives will headline this year's festival. Most festival events are free. Ticket purchases are required for Marty Stewart's show, and you can get more information at forestfestival.com. That's forestfestival.com. Now on to the Sweet Potato Festival. This will be held in Darlington, South Carolina, October 12th. This longest-running festival in Darlington County attracts over 27,000 people annually. Events take place in downtown's public square and include live entertainment, an antique classic car show, crafts, music, and an abundance of food made from, yeah, you guessed it, sweet potatoes. Admission free. Ooh, that sounds like fun. And DarlingtonPilotClub.org gets more information about this Sweet Potato Festival. That's the DarlingtonPilotClub.org online. Next, we go to the Duck Jazz Festival in Duck, North Carolina. And just in case, you probably could guess, this one's out on the Outer Banks. October 12th through the 13th, every Columbus Day weekend, the town of Duck features live jazz music from varied performers on two stages. Local businesses offer jazz-themed events and promotions. Also, food and beverages are available for purchase from area restaurants. Guests can even bring their own chairs, blankets, coolers, food, and well-behaved dogs to the events. Admission is free. TownofDuck.com will get you more information online. That's TownofDuck.com to learn more about the Duck Jazz Festival. And to round out the festive fall itinerary, we have the American Indian Intertribal Powwow. This one is in Williamsburg, Virginia, October 12th through the 13th. Members of American Indian tribes share their songs, dances, and stories during this two-day celebration held at Jamestown Settlement. This year, programs will feature special performances and speakers highlighting American Indian women. Now, the event is included with your paid admission to Jamestown Southeast. That's Jamestown Southeast. So lots of things to plan for when it comes to fall traveling, and these are mostly day trips or overnight trips. And also in this issue, September-October 2019, AAA Go, writer Jason Fry has a list and suggestions about fall travel plans that could include what he calls the shoulder season shores. You ready for this one? He says, summer isn't the only time to enjoy a little sun and sand. A fall beach trip means fewer crowds, empty stretches of sand, and often lower lodging rates. The sun's still shining, the water's still warm, and the temperatures are ideal. And we've rounded up some spots for your shoulder season shore escape. First up is Ocracoke Island, North Carolina. North Carolina's Outer Banks are a vacation hotspot throughout the summer into the shoulder season, so escape the crowds where legendary pirate Captain Blackbeard sought his own respite, Ocracoke Island. Yes, Blackbeard and his crew paid Ocracoke many visits, but you won't have to worry about pirates when you go. Your only concern will be which empty stretch of beach will you walk today, where to find the best fishing hole, and which restaurant will dish up dinner tonight. Rent bicycles to explore this island at a slower pace and pedal over to the 1823 Ocracoke Lighthouse, one of the oldest active-duty lighthouses in the U.S. Explore the waterfront at Silver Lake and head out to the beaches for a swim before heading back to freshen up at Edwards of Ocracoke, the castle bed and breakfast, or your cottage in the Maritime Forest. Rub elbows with locals at Eduardo's Taco Stand. Try the fried shrimp or crab and jalapeno tacos. Ocracoke Oyster Company or Diageo, where you feel hungry. And if you feel daring, join a ghost tour through the end of September. Learn about the other residents of Ocracoke Island. Who knows, you may even see one or two along the way. Well, another choice for you, if you like the shoulder season idea, Holden Beach, North Carolina, one of the southernmost beaches in North Carolina. Holden Beach has all the sand, sun, and shelling you could want, but that's only half of the shoulder season story. In Brunswick County, there are 567 holes of golf on more than 30 courses waiting on you to tee off. Oh, you're not a golfer? Well, dial up one of the fishing charters in town and head out for a day of offshore fishing or stick to the Intercoastal Waterway for some inshore angling. Fishing, not your thing? Well, hop on a kayak or stand-up paddleboard. Sign up for surfing lessons. The water and waves can be ideal this time of year. Or just head out for a pleasure cruise. Holden Beach deals out pleasure in bunches, from a platter of steamed shrimp at Provision Company or a seafood pot pie. Ooh, that sounds interesting. From Dockhouse Seafood and more. But no matter how you choose to fill your days or your stomach, be sure to bring your blanket to the beach and spend some time stargazing. Can't beat it. Well, let's go on to South Carolina. The place is Bluffton, South Carolina, the heart of South Carolina's low country. Bluffton sits on a bluff overlooking the May River, and it's just a short drive from Hilton Head Island. Named one of the South's best small towns and as one of America's happiest seaside towns by a pair of lauded Southern magazines, we have to agree. From kayaking on the May River in nearby Jarvis Creek, searching for dolphins, osprey, and other wildlife, to gallery hopping in Old Town to historic tours that dive into the town's backstory, you'll find no shortage of ways to spend your day. But don't miss October's historic Bluffton Arts and Seafood Festival, a week-long festival that shows off the best of the Lowcountry's fresh seafood and the breadth of Bluffton's quirky art community. The festival's juried fine art show features more than 100 artists vying for the top spots, while artists and art lovers stroll the streets and sample food from dozens of restaurants. If you want a perfect shoulder season weekend, try the last 2 days of the festival when live music keeps the energy high. Pamper yourself with a stay at the Montage Palmetto Bluff. All that in Bluffton, South Carolina. And then we have the Golden Isles of Georgia, the southernmost set of beaches on our list. Georgia's Golden Isles, St. Simon's and Little St. Simon's Island, Sea Island, and Jekyll Island have been named in the nation's top islands for 4 consecutive years. And once you spend a day or even an hour there, you'll agree. From astounding driftwood beach on Jekyll Island and the pristine beauty of St. Simon's beaches to the stretches of the Altamaha River, nature is on full display here. For a full taste of shoulder season luxury, enjoy a stay at the Lodge or the Cloister on Sea Island, and these have some high star ratings, 5 stars there, or Jekyll Island's Jekyll Ocean Club or the Western Jekyll Island, and that's a 4, and both of those are 4 stars. And then we have parks and nature preserves to give you a feel for the maritime forest, and a kayak or powerboat trip along the marshes and the Altamaha River are sure to bring up stories of Alti, the Altamaha, legendary sea monster that may or may not call these waters home. You just have to go to find out, won't you? Oh, my goodness. Some fun there for the fall. And how about some other ways to take some weekend trips for the fall? Well, glad you asked, as we have the Carolina Road Trip Planner, also found in the September-October 2019 issue of AAA Go Magazine. And let me flip to that real quick for you. Coming up on September the 14th, we have the Aiken Music Fest in Highlands in Aiken, South Carolina. This includes live music, local food and drinks. Vendors are going to be on hand with music makers and creators, and creator markets, rather, I should say. And there is a fee involved with the Aiken Music Festival. For more information, go to AikenMusicFest.com. That's AikenMusicFest.com. And then we have the Bluffton Boiled Peanut Festival. That's going to be at Bluffton Oyster Factory Park in Bluffton, South Carolina, on September the 14th. Well, we've run out of time for today's show. We'll have more on the calendar in a future episode. Be sure to listen. Hope you've enjoyed your journey today. I'm Mike Edwards, and I've been reading for the North Carolina Reading Service, the content of our program intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Our broadcast is readily available as a podcast after the broadcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. Comments and questions can be directed to 919-832-5138. Bye-bye.